Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. If you love digging into the week's political headlines, subscribe to Vanity Fair. Our reporters take you behind the scenes of some of the biggest stories from the campaign trail to the halls of Congress. Just for our Inside the Hive listeners, save 15% on a yearly digital subscription to Vanity Fair with promo code POD15. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off 1 year of all you can read, watch, and hear.
Welcome to Inside the Hive. I am Emily Jane Fox. I'm here with Joe Hagan, and Joe Hagan is in his car.
I'm in my car. I'm in a parking lot on the thruway. I just left the capital of New York State, Albany. Maybe you heard about it in the news because of our governor. But I was there for much more interesting, or for at least to me, interesting reason, which was I just got my first dose of the Moderna vaccine flowing through my, coursing through my veins. And I'm feeling very good about it, I gotta say.
Well, you should be. This is a miracle. It is a huge day for Inside the Hive. One giant shot for Joe Hagan, one leap for mankind.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell everybody how this came to be? Because I think it's a great COVID vaccine.
Well, it's interesting. I'm glad that you asked that because in recent episodes, we've talked about kind of like the disorganized quality of the rollout in various states that we live in. And, you know, anecdotally, you hear about people just basically getting vaccinated by hook or by crook, like in any way they can, you know, and there's like everybody knows some loophole or everybody's trying to figure out how to get one. And of course, I'm no different. And I heard about a program. I heard about it. I signed up. And they, you know, really very quickly said, well, show up Thursday. We're having one at the Times Union, you know, auditorium, which, by the way, I saw Bruce Springsteen there 3 years ago. And he was fantastic.
Yeah, but I thought you meant you saw him there today. And I was like, what?
No, not today. No, I was there 3 years ago. I saw Bruce there 3 years ago. The ghost of Springsteen was still very much
his
there
presence.
For me. So I went there and I put on this like Dayglo green vest that said runner on it because that was my job. I was a runner. And my job was to go into this back room where all of these wonderful women were assembling all of the vaccine, you know, syringes, the loaded syringes. And they would put them all into these little buckets. And I would carry the buckets out onto the floor of the auditorium to all these different tables and give them to the vaccinators so that they could stick them into the people's arms. And it was just so inspiring and amazing to see this entire kind of operation rolling along. And then just to be a part of it was just fun because I felt like this is a national effort. I really never really, you know, you hear that. You hear it said, this, oh, we've got a national effort to try to vaccinate everybody. And then you're involved in it suddenly, or you're being vaccinated because there were people, you know, in line out in front. There were 1,000 people that showed up today. You know, I was just there putting stickers on people that said, I've been vaccinated, or, you know, giving the cards that you see people posting on Instagram and everywhere else. I had those blank stacks of those to give to all the vaccinators to fill out. And, you know, you're just part of the, you're a cog in the machine, but you're just so happy to be so because you realize what an incredible effort this whole thing is and how historic of a thing it is that we're all involved in, you know?
You feel the weight of it, don't you? In a good way.
I felt the weight of it and I felt so kind of proud to be involved in it. And let me just tell you a funny scene. I mean, just these women I discussed, they were all worked for the Albany County Department of Health. Mm. And they were all back in this sort of like generic room, just all around these tables, assembling these syringes. And then there was one woman responsible for the vials and she'd bring them out of the freezer. And then they would, you know, put the doses into the syringes and then organized them by how many numbers they needed because they don't want to get too many or too little, you know. And just if you'll allow me, I just,
please,
as an aside, I would like to tell you the names of these women because they became my friends today. And it was kind of wonderful because they were from all walks of life, and it just felt like they were like kind of a the matriarchy that was was helping save our public health. And so these women were Celia, Susan, Terry, Vanessa, Valerie, Elizabeth, Kyla, and they who was the woman who was sort of like the foreman of the whole thing. Her name is Erin, and she was like a wonderfully kind of like warm, tough woman who at the end of my time volunteering came up to me and said the magic words, well, do you want to be vaccinated? And I said, yeah, because and it was at the end of the whole thing. We'd done all the, you know, the paying customers, quote unquote. And so I went up to the floor and I, you know, saddled up and got jabbed. And I have to say, I felt it was like a kind of a magical experience. And I would recommend it if you live in a state where they're taking volunteers to help with this effort. It's more than you think it's going to be. It's really, at least was that way for me. I was really heartened by the whole thing.
I'm heartened hearing it. It's a mitzvah that you volunteered and were a cog in this. And it's very, very cool. And I think it's something you'll be able to tell your girls about and your girls' children about, God willing, someday, and all the things. I also think you should write about these badass women who are in charge of it. It feels like a really great little writing assignment that I'm giving you. But, you know, it's so much hearing about this day and how you're speaking about the people you volunteered with and just the awe and the majesty of being part of this historic thing. It makes me feel like so much of this incredibly historic time that we've been living through the last year has been done in private and in quiet. And so much of the despair and suffering and loss and hardship and isolation has been alone in our homes with just our, you know, if we're lucky enough to have family at home or roommates or whoever it may be, we haven't had any collective experience, whether positive or negative, on both the ability to celebrate the huge achievement that this vaccine is and mourn for the many things that we've all lost along the way. And it just seems like we're going to have so much to make up for as the world opens up. And it's also just... I mean, I have been so isolated here. I think that's a function of Los Angeles culture, and we've been extra, extra, extra careful, and, you know, we're far away from family, and we're both able, incredibly luckily, to work from home here, and so we don't have a real reason to not be isolated. It just makes me feel like I'm just excited to be around strangers, and I want to talk to you about, like, all the, I have such fantasies for life that are small in nature, but there are things I'm just desperate to get back to. But the thing that I'm feeling now, I got vaccinated earlier this week with my first dose, and I felt all the things that you felt. I was less heroic. I was not volunteering. I went to a Rite Aid, but I still felt like it's just the best moment ever. And I can't wait for my second shot in a few weeks. And I'm also feeling a little bit anxious about resuming life as normal, as excited as I am. And I know we have a lot of time until we resume life as normal, and we will be following the CDC guidelines about what is safe for not only us, but for community and our community members. But we are coming back to New York in about a month. I have not been back to New York since early February of 2020. I'm coming back to a new apartment there. I had to pack up my entire old apartment from Los Angeles and move all of my stuff to my parents' garage in Philadelphia. So I haven't seen 99% of my belongings in more than a year. I have not seen the city since I left it in normal times. I haven't really seen friends. I haven't seen coworkers. And I am like a little nervous. And I don't know exactly why I am, but I'm like nervous about coming back to a place that will be different because I'm moving to a different home there. And different because I know how much the city has changed and evolved. And I don't know what life is going to look like. And of all the things that have had to change over the last year, like I've gotten in a routine, you know, and I've gotten used to a place where I've experienced the unknown and unexpected. And I'm now going to be uprooting that and experiencing it in a totally different way. And I'm generally a change-averse person. But there's something about this particular thing that's like, it's giving me anxiety. And this feels like a good time to talk about my very private anxiety in front of our very many listeners.
And they're here for you, I think.
In the 1980s and 90s, New York City needed a tough cop like Detective Louis Scarsella.
Putting bad guys away.
There's no feeling like it in the world.
He was the guy who made sure the worst killers were brought to justice.
That's one version.
This guy is a piece of shit.
Derek Hamilton was put away for murder by Detective Scarsella.
In prison, Derek turned himself into the best jailhouse lawyer of his generation.
And the law was my girlfriend. This is my only way to freedom.
Derek and other convicted murderers
started a law firm behind bars.
We never knew we had the same cop in the case.
Scarsella.
We got to show that he's a corrupt cop.
They can go f*** themselves.
I'm Steve Fishman.
And I'm Dax Devlin Ross. And this is The Burden. Listen to new episodes of The Burden starting March 19th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And to hear episodes 1 week early and ad-free with exclusive content, subscribe to True Crime Clubhouse on Apple Podcasts.
You know what? I'm glad you said everything you said is exactly what my experience today spoke to. And first of all, myself included, I haven't been around that many people.
Yes.
In a year. I mean, to see that many people in one place, and it was an auditorium where I had seen Springsteen 3 years ago. So it was like, it felt like a place where people gather like that, right? You could call it my first concert since the pandemic, but it was like a vaccination concert. And it was so moving to be back among people. And everybody, you could feel it in the air how people were curious to see each other and had and gave each other a lot of room. You know what I mean? Like they were in terms of just kindnesses. There is, I think everybody's a little tentative coming out of the cave, right? And after all of this and everything we've seen. But we have a lot to talk to each other about, it turns out. I mean, you know, when I was with these women back there assembling syringes, which I did, they conscripted me to, you know, join their factory for a while. And I was putting syringes together. And we started talking about just office space and how all the different companies that we'd worked for seemed like not as many people were going to go back to offices because it turned out so many of our institutions could function with everybody at home. Right. So this wasn't something that was just unique to a journalist who works for Vanity Fair, which is owned by Condé Nast. But every walk of life, you know, one woman worked at an insurance company and she had the same exact experience. So, you know, we are all going to come out and where we're all going to end up meeting will have something to do with it. I mean, in what forum, whether it's like a if you go out to hear some music or if you're going to go to a restaurant or if you're going to meet friends at a restaurant. As you know, learned from interviewing that epidemiologist last week, you know, we're still going to be wearing masks for a while, but you're going to have personal peace of mind about your own health. And that is going to start to liberate you in ways that are going to make you feel either anxious or totally excited. I mean, I think there's going to be a mix of people that feel like you and people who are going to be, as I've been joking with my friends, I said, as soon as I get vaccinated, I'm just going to walk around wearing a Speedo and flip-flops and drinking margaritas. But that's not actually going to happen. I'm just joking.
I mean, you do you. You live your life. I would support whatever decision you make in this next phase. I mean, not whatever, within reason. But most things, I would say, live your life. But I would say overwhelmingly, I am so excited. But in my heart of hearts, which I bear here, I'm just nervous for a change, which I'm always nervous for in every stage of my life. But this feels like, you know, it was such a kind of traumatic period. Not personally.
Absolutely.
I had the luckiest version of quarantine I could ever have. But, you know, it's life-changing in every single way for every single person. And you kind of hunker down when so much has changed and you settle into a routine. And I'm definitely a routinized person. And so to shake up that routine that kind of sheltered you through the hardest time in our world's recent history, it's jarring. I'm just a little jarred. I know that anticipation is also 1,000 times worse than reality. And the second I land in New York, I'm going to be like, how did I ever leave this place? And I have some very specific fantasies that I'm looking forward to once I'm vaccinated that are all probably safe to do now, but I have been withholding. I cannot wait to get a pedicure, which seems small.
Yeah.
But if you are someone who runs every single day and has a little bit of vanity, to not have a pedicure for more than a year is not pretty. And I'm just so desperate for it. I'm obviously so excited to see my family, who I have not seen for far too long. And I'm like desperate to see my grandparents, my parents, my in-laws, my sister, my niece, nephew, all of those things. And the thing I've been fantasizing about most when I do come back to New York, and hopefully the weather will be starting to get warmer, and I just want to walk aimlessly for hours on the street. I will wear a mask proudly, happily, because it is not a political statement and just a public courtesy. But I remember for the 9 years that I lived in the city, just like having maybe like one errand to do that was in a different neighborhood, and it would be twilight, and I'd leave my apartment and I'd walk somewhere that was like probably just slightly too far for a comfortable errand. And then I'd walk all the way home, and I'd get home and my legs would be like kind of burning, and I'd just sit on my couch and I will have seen all the neighborhoods. I will have seen all the restaurants that were brimming with people at happy hour. And even if I didn't stop in anywhere, just like the act of seeing life is such a thing that I miss. And I can't wait to just observe life. I obviously want to live mine, and there are so many things that I can't wait to do. But I'm just desperate to like observe life too.
Yeah. And to have random things happen.
Yes.
That you can observe and that change your mind in an instant about something or give you an inspirational moment. I mean, anybody that's read a book of poetry knows that, you know, so many flights of inspiration. And that the muse of just our lives has so much to do with being out among people and having, you know, the kind of a pinball effect of just bouncing out and around in the world, especially when you're living in New York. Because that's the magic of New York, is you're walking around and you're in the crowd, like Walt Whitman.
Yes.
Right? So that's something I desperately look forward to, you know, and to extract us from the virtual world that we've been stuck in. Kind of to in a dead end kind of way, which brings me to something that we have been talking about on this podcast and just privately with people we know. A couple of months ago, when it was the end of the last presidential administration, last White House, we talked about how, wow, when this guy's gone and this news cycle cools down, you know, that the effect on the media and people in our business would be one of like a depression. You know, there would be a kind of like PTSD maybe, but also a kind of like suddenly there would be an absence of the five alarm kind of adrenaline that we were all living on. And, you know, recently we had a meeting of the editorial minds at The Hive, and our editor, Miriam Elder, said some wise things. She said, well, I think it makes sense that the reading public is taking a step back after all of this and trying to, you know, reclaim themselves. Everything they've been forced to pay attention to, like you're in the Clockwork Orange with your eyes pried open, you know, watching the ultraviolence. You know, this is like, this is, I think that what we're going through now and the anxiety you're talking about and the experience I had today are all part of this process of moving out of this uniquely horrible time that we were in. And there's going to be a lot of uncertainty. What does constitute news now? What should we be paying attention to? What is important? And, you know, are we overreacting? Are our reactions to things now kind of warped by how we reacted so much to what we saw before in those previous years? So, you know, I do think, but the opportunity in this moment is so high. And it's one that I think that, you know, I think there's lots of critical reporting to be done about the Biden administration, but I think Joe Biden's kind of like absence from the news cycle while also getting things done that we can read about in the news every day. And it might not be the stuff you click on because you're like, oh, there's a new, you know, Department of the Interior appointee. And then you're like, I don't need to know anything about that. But, you know, the fact that everything's been turned, you know, the other way, it's been reversed, right? Now we'd have an absence of five alarm news and things are getting done. That is good. And that allows you to open your door, walk outside into that beautiful Los Angeles sun, which I'm jealous of right now, and, you know, rejoin the world. And, you know, you can do it in baby steps, right? Or you can, you know, find your way out there on your own. And it's going to be part of all of our collective journeys, but also our individual journeys.
I
can't believe I use the word journey so much.
Very the bachelor of you.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election. Guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
I couldn't agree with everything you said more. I have been just relishing in the fact that I like really couldn't give less of a shit about any news that's happening right now. And maybe that's my own overcorrection. But it just feels like business as usual, government as usual. And I am obviously paying very close attention to everything that's happening. But it feels... everything is high stakes. There's a lot happening in Washington. There's a lot happening around the country. There's a lot happening in the world. But it feels like normal work is happening and there are competent people making those things happen. And if I don't look at Twitter for 3 hours, like, I'll be good. I may even be better for it.
Yeah.
I think that the combination of that, added to the fact that people are going to be leaving their houses and their phones and the internet because they've been so starved for actual human interaction, as we've been talking about, is going to create this like cleanse that I think we desperately need. There's so much hate on the internet and so much rush to judgment about people on the internet. And I literally hate the term cancel culture now because it has been so co-opted and is the only thing that they talk about on Fox News because there's no reason to talk about President Biden. And it has become like the new culture war that the right has glommed onto because they have the economy is good under a democratically controlled White House and Congress. And they have nothing else except for to glom onto a culture war, which has been their tactic for a very long time.
Decades.
Yes. And I think that this, if you want to refer to a culture of like judgment on the internet by people who are anonymized and platformed and isolated and alone and disenfranchised, is like it has reached a fever pitch. And we've obviously been building to this moment for as long as the internet has existed. And we talked about this a lot when we had the two fantastic disinformation reporters on from NBC News. But it is just like, it's gross and it's disheartening and it's leading to some really scary things. And so my hope is that with news being normalized and with people actually being able to leave their houses and go out in the world, I hope that that just steadies a little bit, because where we are now is not healthy for anybody and it's leading to rashness and hate. And I hope that's like the thing that we leave behind in this pandemic era.
Well, there's nothing better or more curative of all this outrage culture on social media that kind of exacerbates all the things you're talking about and is the source of them than people walking away from their computers. So, you know, if when the summer rolls around and people feel more comfortable going outside and can go to public events, you know, within reason, whatever we decide, you know, from state to state is the reasonable way to do it. I mean, that's the cure for everything that we've been talking about. Frankly, it's like, you know, the sunlight cure, I guess you could call that. So one of the things that I'm hoping will be a fallout from all of this is that, and I've been thinking a lot about this, that we can go back to doing what you and I think probably in our journalism careers focus on the most, which is doing longer, more thoughtful journalism, you know, thinking about things with more depth, writing at length, appealing to people's longer attention spans and to their sense of being able to be present and thoughtful and fascinated in ways that don't have to do with the miniature news nuggets that drive these news cycles that we're talking about. You know, now that may be optimistic of me or like, you know, the rose-colored glasses, but I do think that people's sense of personal alarm about what's going on in the world has shortened all of their attention spans, you know. And in many ways, what we do in the long-form print journalism is probably providing, it provides context for all of this stuff, and we help people digest it and understand, you know, things in a way that grounds them, I hope.
I think that's right. I've personally noticed that my attention span is better. I'm able to read fiction again, which I hadn't really been able to do. I really spend so much less time on Twitter, and I listen to things. I listen to podcasts that are not only news. I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks, and I'm just like, I just find I'm enjoying life so much more, and it will just be such an amazing change. And I want to get you out of your parking lot, but before we go, I think we should just mention the events that happened this week. And this is news that is worth tuning into, of the shootings in Georgia. And, we have seen a rash of racism, of violence, of hate crimes against Asian Americans in this country, particularly Asian American women. And we can't not mention it. And I think there's obviously a very clear through line of how it was fomented over the last 4 years under our former president's administration and on the internet and on Fox News and Facebook. And it should be scary and devastating for everybody. And I'm Jewish and I grew up Jewish. And my parents growing up were one of the things that I just like remember my parents saying so much is that like hate against any group is hate against every group. And maybe it wasn't exactly in those terms, but that was exactly the meaning. And it is scary what is happening. And I think, I know that we're going to talk about this a lot on our podcast, I believe next week, but we need to figure out how to be good allies to people who are facing this kind of discrimination and violence. And there are a lot of people who are rightfully very scared and really angry about what's happening. And we should just keep talking about the ways that we can support people who are feeling that way and to try and be there for people who are feeling all the right feelings and to try and figure out a way out of this darkness and depravity and all the scary shit that's going on.
Well, let me offer something that I think can leave us on an up note.
Please.
You know, I recently got in touch with an old friend who was worked in Democratic politics in Washington, sort of like was loosely associated with the Clintons at one time in Chicago, but has since become involved in a program in Chicago that I think is really beautiful. And I've always wanted to mention it or write about it, but it's called the People's Music School in Chicago. And it is a organization that was founded by a woman, Dr. Rita Simo, who was like a, she was an immigrant living in a underprivileged, you know, in a difficult neighborhood in Chicago, and decided she wanted the children to have a great music education, and, you know, brought in music teachers and people that knew how to play their instruments and to teach, you know, young people of color who wouldn't ordinarily be, you know, have access to that kind of education, you know, teach them how to play instruments. And it's since exploded into a thing where Barack Obama got involved and they had a performance of the People's Music School at the founding of his Chicago Foundation, his nonprofit. And to bring up the Royals, Prince Harry was there as well at the opening.
Hello.
But and it's this kind of beautiful, moving thing that and tomorrow, or I should say Friday night, if you're listening to this, they're having what they call Big Night 2021. And it's Esperanza Spalding is going to be playing with the kids and the Soul Rebels from New Orleans, who are friends of John Baptiste's. And it's going to be this kind of, if you're looking for inspiration and ways in which the world could look brighter rather than darker, then you should check out this, go to the, you know, peoplesmusicschool.org and check it out.
That's a great note.
Because, as you know, I'm a huge music geek, but I do believe that things like this, where you form community around something like music and have a mentoring program that can lift people up out of their circumstances. You know, being poor in Chicago, you know, suffering from the kind of racism that goes on just structurally so that you can't get access to this kind of education ordinarily, suddenly there it is in front of you. And it was invented, you know, it was created by one woman. It was one woman's vision. And then it kind of grew into this miraculous thing. And anyway, I hope that people will check it out. And I say all that as a way to start thinking about things you haven't been thinking of because you couldn't. And now we can try to improve not only other people's lives, but our own sense of how we're going to connect to the rest of society when we come out of our houses with our vaccinations.
Amen. Be good people. Be good members of the community. Listen, do your part. And I feel so much better having talked to you. You are a real trooper for the day that you had, and for doing this in a rest stop, bumming off of some rest stop Wi-Fi. If you could see Joe's setup, you would be totally charmed, as I am. And next week, we're going to have a great interview, a great episode for you. But in the meantime, stay healthy, stay safe, and we will see you right back here next week.
See you next week, Emily.
Three, two, one. Political Breakdown is a daily politics podcast from KQED in San Francisco that goes deep into the issues you care about. I'm Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. Look, 2024 is gonna get weird.
Who decides when there's been an insurrection or not?
We're still in the innovation phase of AI.
And that is where you see that they're not actually being equitable and trying to build a utopia where we can all use drugs happily together.
But whatever happens this election year, the KQED Politics team is in this with you. Political Breakdown. Find it wherever you listen to podcasts.